Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is the NFL maven, the smartest person about the Super Bowl and professional football, our longtime guest and good friend, Greg Cosell. Now, remember, we love taking your questions, so write into politicswarroom@gmail.com or send a tweet to @Politicon for next week's show. Well, now, we're going to get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. In other exciting news, the documentary Carville, Winning is Everything, Stupid, is now streaming on Max. So please, stream away. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. Now tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Fay Nutrition, MD Hearing Aids, and Magic Spoon in our show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors because it really helps make this podcast happen. James, to call Trump's first couple weeks a shit show so understates the chaos, the damage, and the threat to the law. By his Bannon-esque flooding of the zone this week, he wants to take over Gaza, presumably make a fortune building condos in the Mediterranean. Never mind that stupid idea is never going anywhere. But it does serve his purpose. It distracts from some of his more serious offenses, like Elon Musk, a South African native billionaire who never has been elected to anything or confirmed anything, and a bunch of largely anonymous young geeks running around and dismantling government agencies, gaining access to the federal payment system and private data, private records. And then those crony lawyers over at the Justice Department are firing anyone who they think has a loyalty, not to Trump, but to the Constitution. I can't believe I'm going to say what I'm about to say. This is shadows of Italy in the 1920s or Germany in the 1930s. And congressional Republicans are pitiful lapdogs. If Czar Donald wants authority, he has it. They are voting to confirm several members that they know are unqualified, but you got to go along. And what it does is it distracts from his crazy tariffs and his capitulation, fortunately, this week on Canadian and Mexico tariffs and some of his other real vulnerabilities.
Well, where do you start? So we talk about distractions. For a distraction to work, it's a two-party trick. There has to be a distractor and a distractee.
Right.
So he's the distractor. Now, by default, we don't have to be the distractee. But because if we went for every crazy thing and started trying to rank them, I don't know how you'd ever get out of that maze or whatever it is. And he just, and I love the people, who go on TV on a panel after the election and say, don't worry, everything's going to be fine.
That's right. Yeah, you know, we can work with him.
We can work with him. Okay. And then we had the people, you know, very well, be very clear and upfront. You're not one of some responsible conservative Republican was going to save us from this.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't come. They're not there. Okay. Let's just get over it. They're not coming. The Calvary's not coming. The courts are not coming. Maybe nothing. And where do we pick our fights? What is the overarching theme to every crazy ass thing? And they're so insane. I have to comment on the New York Times, Peter Baker. I know Peter Baker forever. You have too. He's a experienced reporter, to say the least. He's got a lot of foreign policy background. He and his wife wrote a what people claim is a very good book on James Baker. And the opening line, New York Times, is he's not thinking outside the box. There's no box anywhere. There's no box. Get over it. I mean, if Peter Baker could be, I'm not saying he's a bad guy at all, but might be one of the five most conventional people in the national media, says he's not outside the box. No one even knows where the frickin' box is. And that's what we're dealing with. And, you know, if we go back and we can find all the times earlier when I talked about Bannon saying flooding his own with shit. Well, we flooded with shit now. So when that happens, I hope we can, like, pick a unifying theme that the public will find to be credible. The Democrats will find to be really credible and excite them. And it has to be true. And all of the truth is, this is a government by billionaires, for billionaires, of billionaires. Mm-hmm. And that's all it is. Gaza, he just wants all of his friends to get rich. They want to open casinos on the coast and think about you. All of this stuff is a giant shakedown effort. And I think that is, you're not going to get it perfect, but you have to give people a credible explanation of this craziness, because it's inexplicable. I think the way we got to look at it is through the eyes of a billionaire.
Yeah, you know, I think that's right. Those confirmations, those cowardly senators, they're about to confirm Bobby Kennedy for HHS, Kash Patel for FBI, Tulsi Gabbard for Director of National Intelligence, and they have already confirmed Pete Hegseth for defense. I venture to say a large, I don't know what the number is, 10, 15, 20 of those Republicans know those candidates are absolutely unqualified and dangerous to be in that position, but they're afraid. I had real respect for Bill Cassidy, the conservative from Louisiana. He's a doctor. He knows that Bobby Kennedy is a vaccine denier. He knows that Bobby Kennedy can't be trusted at HHS. But you know, he also knows he's up for election next year. Tom Tillis of North Carolina, you know, such absolute BS, said, I think we need a disruptor. No, what Tom Tillis wants is not to have a right-wing challenger. So I just think you can't count on the Congress. Republicans, they've decided to give King Donald whatever he wants. And I just want to go back to the Muskites. They've got 40 people running around doing whatever they want to, sowing havoc. And they don't give, you know, James, when they come into an aid, they don't give their last name. They just say, hey, I'm John or I'm Susie, and I'm here with Elon Musk, and you get out. You're going to do this, or we're going to go in and get the payment system. And they go into USAID, dismantle. One of their criticisms was they have all kinds of woke spending. I'm sure they do have some. One of them was a $20 million to create a Sesame Street in Iraq. Man, what a great investment that would be. Think what Sesame Street did for this country, but they don't care about that. But I think they ought to be identified. I mean, they're doing things. They have power. Some have come out. There's apparently a Marco Alexa, 25-year-old, who has access to the Treasury system. Thomas Shedd, Luke Farragut, the guy who's running, apparently his name is Steve Davis. Much of this I'm getting from the New York Times and other places. But there's a guy at the Pentagon who Trump or Musk has made Air Force Secretary. I think I had the name right. Troy Meinke, M-E-I-N-K. And he was a bureaucrat who survived. Why did he survive, James? Because he was the one that facilitated a multi-billion dollar contract for Elon Musk's SpaceX. This is really, we've never seen anything quite like that. But, you know, just a memo to all the aggressive reporters, newsletters, newspapers out there. Name these people. Just tell them who they are and what's in their background. I mean, I assume, do any of them have criminal backgrounds or unsavory affiliations? We do that for other people. The press needs to be aggressive. You're right about the Democrats. They need to be selective.
And I mean, you just show why it's so hard to be selective, right?
It is.
That's the problem. There is so much, and it is so difficult, and it requires so much patience, and it requires not doing so many things. You know, the Musk thing is easy. He wants to make money. He's a huge defense contractor. And so you have to look at that as primarily his motivation, of which he is. And he wants to be an even huger defense contractor. And the less ability day is of the government when you haul out all the talented people. Who's going to go through your bid? Who's going to go through your ROP or request for performance, or whatever it is, okay? Nobody. This is all set in motion to distract us from the fact that this is a giant grift and a giant scam for billionaires to make money. And I will, we think this is new. I'll remind you of what it was said about John D. Rockefeller of your home state legislature. He did everything to the Pennsylvania legislature except refine it. Okay? They might even, they might figure a way to refine this legislature before this is over. Okay? I mean, this is not new in American history, but it was one of the great quotes of, he did everything to the Pennsylvania legislature except refine it.
Well... Well, you know, James, I, you're right. There's so damn many targets. It's hard. Oh, there's a difference between what we do, what the press does, what lawyers can do, and what Democrats, particularly in Congress, have to focus on. But you know, there's some things that we have talked about how bad some of these first line appointments are. Bobby Kennedy and Elon and Cash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard. Where do you get a look at some of these second and third level people? I mean, one of them said that basically government only works if it's run by white men. I mean, that's a quote. That's not me. Another I knew about, he was a Pennsylvania congressional and Senate candidate, and he had to drop out after it came out that his wife accused him of violent assault. I mean, these are the people that are populating this administration, I think. And I hope that comes out. And I, on your point about the focus, why not talk about the Treasury Secretary, who people say may be one of the better of this sorry lot, who allowed the raid on the payment system, and he favors a cut in corporate taxes and actively opposes raising the minimum wage? You know, I think that would play pretty well in most places, don't you?
I think it would play tremendously well. And the guy, of course, was a billionaire himself, and he wants policies for him. Just like the old dude. And of course, you know, why does he don't want to pay people? He wants to keep money for himself. They're donors. He doesn't want to raise taxes on incomes over $400,000 a year. He wants to take care of himself. He don't care. He doesn't care about anything but him and people like him. And I can't get mad at people for falling for that, but they were told, they should have known. They were distracted. We did play our seventh-string quarterback in the Super Bowl. I'm sorry, we did it. There's complicity here in a lot of places, but nothing of this. No one should be surprised in the least by any of this. Taking 2 million people and relocating them, who've been there for millennia and millennia. It's so mind-boggling that to talk about it even normalizes.
It is. And, you know, I mean, the Gaza thing isn't even really worth our time. It's just, I mean, no one takes it seriously except Trump, who sees it as a money-making opportunity, because everything for him is a money-making opportunity. I want to say on these congressional Republicans, I'm not sure that Tom Tillis is going to be able to avoid a primary next year, because the right wing doesn't give a damn about Tom Tillis. And they're selling their soul in the hopes that, you know, they can avoid, a contest. So let's tell every right wing, you know, Mark Robinson. Hey, Mark, you didn't make the governorship. You know, try for the Senate next time. It really is. It's depressing. I still hold out hope for a handful like Lisa Murkowski, but not very many.
Handful for what? To do what? To put every charlatan, crook, incompetent buffoon that you can imagine in the cabinet. What are we waiting on?
Yeah.
It ain't coming. No cavalry. Don't listen as hard as you can. Not coming. And... you know, here we are. When I say this, I'm not being dramatic or anything like that. the existence of this entire enterprise is at very, very profound risk right now. These are people that have no understanding of American history, no understanding of what the United States is, what it stands for, anything. And to them, it's just a giant impediment to their money-making machine. That's just what it is. There are no heroes in this place so far. And it seems unlike. Now, Cassidy's going to have a hard time. They'll run against him. And I don't think he can win a Republican primary in Louisiana if Trump comes in and campaigns for him. Maybe he will, but he's making a bargain. The same thing with Tillis. They're making a bargain to that history, their names will live in infamy in history. And if they get reelected, I think they'd say it's worth it. But I'm not sure they're going to make it.
Yeah. James, when you say this whole enterprise is at risk, I don't disagree. But from their vantage point, look, I think, much of this is illegal or unconstitutional. And I think the Democratic legal community has gotten energized. There are all kinds of suits in the works. Some people we know are going to be very, very prominent in this, and they are the best lawyers around. They are better than the much, much better than the hacks that Trump has at Justice and elsewhere. But it's going to take time. Time is not on the side of people who want to restore decency and order to government. They're disruption, as they call it, destruction, it really is, will be very hard to repair the longer it takes. And there's always the danger that ultimately that Republican Supreme Court, will side with Trump on some of this stuff. So I know what you're saying when you say the whole enterprise is at risk, but I wonder if that bothers them.
Well, first of all, I don't think they thought of it. The second thing is, the judges matter by a factor of 100 over the lawyers. We can have the best lawyers in the world, which I think to some extent we do have superb lawyers, but they don't count. They can't be any better than the judge. I don't know how you're going to need a lock and a draw, and how you're going to pass the Supreme Court. I have no idea. But it is a very risky and problematical bet to bet on the legal system here. Look, we have to use it. Yes, but I think they're just forging ahead. They don't give a shit. They're going to make as much money as fast as they can make it, and they don't give a crap.
Well, I'm afraid you're right. I really am. Do we have anything else to close this upbeat conversation? God, it's depressing. Hey, James, Super Bowl 59, and we have a regular guest. No one knows pro football better than Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Greg, your mentor and my dear friend Steve Sable had a narrative going into every big game. Obviously, this time, the Chiefs' historic opportunity to win three straight is one narrative. Is there another, and is there an Eagles narrative for this game?
I would say that the Eagles' narrative is the fact that they have an offensive line that weighs more than 1,700 pounds. That's the biggest offensive line in the history of the National Football League, if I'm not mistaken. So that to me is a pretty good narrative.
Oh, wow. It sure is. You're a master at sizing up matchups. Listen, you're the expert. Saquon Barkley, to my layman's eyes, is as great a running back as I have ever seen. And the Chiefs defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, may be the best or one of the best. So talk about that matchup. Some of the other backs did pretty well, and they're not nearly as good as Barkley.
It's so hard for me to talk about that because Steve Spagnuolo, if you guys may recall, he was out of the game for a year about 4 or 5 years ago after the Giants and before Andy Reid hired him as his defensive coordinator with the Chiefs. And because his wife's from Philadelphia, he had a place in this area and he called me up and he said, "Hey, can I come in every Monday and watch tape, just so I can stay up on the league. And so he came basically to my office in our area where I do the matchup show here at Films. And that year he spent almost every Monday all day watching tape. So I've known Spags for a long time.
You taught him well, so, Greg. You know,
what's that?
You taught him well.
Oh, yeah, sure. I asked him, he probably got tired of me, Albert, because I asked him so many questions, you know? I mean, because I'd be watching tape and he'd be in the other room right next door and it'd be, you know, Spats, come here. What's going on here? You know, so he probably got tired of me. But, you know, the Eagles are a really interesting offensive team because they made a decision really going back to after their bye week, which was week 5, if I'm not mistaken, that they really wanted to focus on the run game. And I don't want to say take the ball out of Jalen Hurts' hands because, you know, Jalen's a very good player, but they realized what the strength of their offense was, which was their O-line and their run game. I've just got a funny feeling that they're going to come out in this game and throw the ball a little more than people might expect. That doesn't mean they're going to not give it to Barkley, but I just have a feeling they're going to be a little more aggressive with the pass game early to see how that plays out.
Boy, it's just hard to think. At some point, you just think Barkley's going to break one. I mean, I don't know if he will, but that just it seems.
You know, it's funny you say that because doesn't it seem when you watch the Eagles that it's inevitable that at some point he's going to break
one? Yeah.
It just seems as if you're just waiting for that play where he breaks one.
Yeah. You know, James will consider me a homer because I was raised in Philadelphia with Steve. But I think Jalen Hurts gets a bum rap. He had a fabulous Super Bowl 2 years ago. Yeah. He's been hurt the last couple of years. Was great against the Commanders. He's not a Lamar Jackson or a Josh Allen. But I think he's a pretty damn good quarterback. What's your assessment, Greg?
Well, I think he does a lot of things really well that are not necessarily statistically based. And that's why I think a lot of people look at him and think that, you know, he's not a great player the way you think of some of the names you mentioned, Al. I think he has a great feel for the overall team because one of the things about Jalen Hurts, they have a great defense too, Philadelphia, and Jalen Hurts does not turn the ball over. And he rarely ever puts the ball in harm's way. Now, there'll be throws that are there that he doesn't make, but you know what? In the context of their team, that doesn't hurt them. A lot of Philly fans, as you know, Al, when he runs to his right and throws it out of bounds, they get upset. But you know what? If they have to punt and the other team has to go 75, 80, 85, 90 yards to score, that's hard to do against that defense. So I think he has a really good understanding of his role within the overall team concept. He's had one interception, I think, since week 5. He just does not turn the ball over.
Greg, Philly fans would have booed Moses. So that's
yeah, it's true.
Let me. James is going to pick up on this, but no one talks to people around the league more than Greg Cosell. What's the consensus? So the refs giving the Chiefs a break?
Look, you know, you guys know how it is. If you're a believer in that kind of stuff, nothing's going to tell you that it's not true. If you're not a believer in it, then you're going to think it's not true. You know, I don't know where to go with that. I mean, you know, unfortunately, and not to get into a different kind of conversation, but we seem to live in a world where everything's rigged. So, you know how people immediately respond to those kinds of things. So I don't see games like that. I mean, I personally believe, for instance, Josh Allen got a first down, but I don't immediately jump to, oh, the game's rigged for the Chiefs. You know, I don't, right. My mind doesn't immediately go that way. I think he got a first down. I don't know what else to say about it.
James.
So Greg, it's a huge storyline. Mahomes, Kelsey, Taylor yep. Swift, Saquon Barkley. You know, for me, the biggest story and most underappreciated story is Andy Reid. But, I mean, you know, he's not what you think of Lombardi or Tom Landry or Belichick. Yep. But place him in the context of great NFL coaches. And what might we see here Sunday night? I just think that Andy Reid has been run over and underappreciated. This guy's accomplishing shit and was good before he ever got there, too.
I think Andy Reid's one of the greats. You know, I was fortunate enough to get to know him when he was in Philly. Got to know his wife. I mean, and he's a great person, which is even better. But, James, I couldn't agree more. I mean, for some reason, and he's just not talked about enough as being a great coach. Now, you know, I remember back when he drafted Donovan McNabb. I remember talking to him about it because a lot of people immediately felt that Donovan McNabb couldn't play NFL quarterback. He was this, you know, he was a runaround guy. This was at a time when those kinds of quarterbacks that move around a lot were not viewed as NFL quarterbacks, James. And he turned McNabb into a really good NFL player. It's easy now to say, oh, Patrick Mahomes is great. But you know what? No one knew that coming in. I remember when Patrick Mahomes came out of college, and there were many, many people, and this is all forgotten because he's achieved so much, many, many people were uncertain as to what Patrick Mahomes would be in the NFL because he was a very reckless, undisciplined college player. And, you know, coaching, probably the thing I've been most grateful about in my career, and both you guys will know exactly who I'm talking about just because we're older gentlemen, unfortunately, but I was very fortunate to be taught the quarterback position by Bill Walsh. Okay. So I appreciate coaching maybe more than others do. And I don't think you can discount, James, to your point, what Andy Reid has meant to Patrick Mahomes' career. And I guarantee Patrick Mahomes would tell you the same thing.
So I know you know this, the Saints gave away a store to draft Mahomes, and Kansas City took him to draft pick before.
Yeah, they were going to take him with the 11th pick in the draft.
Right.
And the Chiefs traded up and took him at 10, and the Saints had to take Marshawn Lattimore. I remember that very well, very well.
So Greg, we're going to be watching a game. Actually, I'm 4.5 blocks from the Superdome, but I think I'm going to watch it on TV, honestly. I'm 80.
Well, I'll be there tomorrow, James. I'm coming down to New Orleans tomorrow.
Just look for me. I'll be on the balcony. If you go to Herb Saint, look for me. You'll probably end up there during the whole thing anyway. It's right.
Well, you know, I've been to New Orleans many times, and I'm at the age, unfortunately, where, you know what, I'm going to do my work. I'm going to go to dinner with friends and, you know, do those kinds of things. You won't find me on Bourbon Street at 1 in the morning. Because, you know what, at Bourbon Street at 1 in the morning, there'll probably be a lot more tush pushes, you know, that are not football based.
No chance you're going to run into me.
Right.
Y'all talking about, I listen to Jalen Hurts, and okay, and he's good. And I watched the LSU-Oklahoma game in playoffs in 2019 season. What do you think Joe Burrow would do if he had the Philadelphia offensive line?
Oh, my God.
Just fantasize what would happen if that happened, okay?
You know, obviously you're talking about two different style quarterbacks.
I understand. I know. Yeah. I'm just
– You know, and again, people can debate what's, you know, what they like better, you know. Some would probably call me a dinosaur or old school. You know, to me, I love watching Joe Burrow play. I love watching quarterbacks that play with such a refined sense of timing and rhythm and get the ball out. You know, Jalen Hurts, that's not the strength of his game, right. But obviously he has his own strengths. They're just different. Okay. And you can win in many ways. You know, I learned long ago. You know, I've been fortunate enough to know a lot of coaches who've coached for a long time just because I'm older. And, you know, one thing I learned early is you can win many ways in this league. There's no one way to do it. And, you know, I think that Jalen Hurts, as I mentioned before, I think he has such an innate feel for his team and how to play within his team. And I think that's a really important trait. He doesn't step outside of what will allow his team to be competitive and win games.
So I watch football. I think if you gave Joe Burrow that much time to pass, he'd have a 92% completion rate. Okay, now, I've just watched him play too many times. But so what? Early in the game, I know everybody's going to be looking for something. Is there something that you're going to be when you got midway, three quarters way through the first quarter? Is there something that you think both teams have to establish, like pass rush or a running game? Or what are you looking for?
I think this is maybe somewhat cliched and not deeply profound.
Okay.
But I'll answer it.
We all owe. We cliches.
Right.
Game's not over until the game's over, you know.
Right.
Where's the fat lady?
Well, when the game's over, we're all geniuses because then we have access to the result. But I think for me, if I could say it this way, and like I say, this is not profound, but I think it's going to be true. I think first down for the Eagles and third down for the Chiefs on offense, because the Chiefs are a phenomenal third down conversion offense, and they do it schematically. They don't do it with the kinds of throws that we think that, you know, we know Mahomes can make down the field. They do it schematically with play concepts. So, and their third down, I think they were second in the league in third down conversion this year, or first maybe, but they're really good on third down. And I think that that's going to be the critical down for their offense. And for the Eagles, first down to me is going to be absolutely critical. And it's one reason why I just have a gut feeling they're going to throw the ball a little more on first down. Everybody's just assuming, hey, let's come out and hand it to Barkley. And I'm not saying they should ignore Barkley. Believe me, they're not going to do that. But I just think first down early in the game for the Eagles, it would not surprise me at all to see them throw the ball.
So you remember, you're old enough, you're well to remember the who's on first riff?
Oh, of course.
I want to do a riff on what's wrong with second down? Every right, game is determined by first down. Oh, they're going to have third down conversion. Are they going to punt around and fourth down? What the fuck happened to second down? Doesn't that count? If you get 8.5 yards on second down, it's not any.
You know, James, it's funny you say that. And both these teams, the Eagles especially, they're four down offenses, which also makes them different than many teams in the league. You know, how many times do you see a defense get so excited? Let's say it's third and nine and the offense gains 7 yards and it becomes fourth and two. And the defense, you know, every guy puts their hand up. It's fourth down. When it's fourth and two, the Eagles are going for it. Especially if it's from their 40-yard line going forward, the Eagles are going for it. They're a four-down offense, and they can play the game differently on offense, knowing that if it's, let's say, fourth and four or less, there's a really good chance they're going for it, and that changes the dynamic of how defenses play, too.
I'm going to have a DEI program for second down. Second down.
I don't know. I think that might now be illegal.
All right. Albert, go ahead.
Let's go back to Patrick Mahomes for a minute. He doesn't have the best stats. He doesn't light up with long bombs. All he does is win. And
right.
Travis Kelce, certainly destined for the Hall of Fame. Now you shrewdly evaded what Spagnuolo's going to do about Barkley. So let me put you on the spot.
Well, I don't know if I know the answer to that. That's why.
Shrewd. But tell me but put yourself in the Eagles' position now. How do you plan? How do you scheme a game plan against Mahomes?
That's a great question, and it's hard. I mean, he runs more in the playoffs, so you have to account for that. You know, we went back here at Films and looked at a lot of the games. You know, when Vic Fangio was the head coach at Denver for 3 years, he played Mahomes 6 times and did not have a lot of success. Now, again, different personnel, so it's not apples to apples, but we were trying to look for concepts. He didn't really spy him. And I'm wondering if he might do that situationally in this game, because they've got a linebacker named Oren Burks, who's 6'3", 235, and is a great athlete. He was actually a safety in college. And it wouldn't surprise me to see him do that at times. Again, you don't do that 30 times
Mahomes.
In the game. What's that?
Just shadow Mahomes?
Yeah, shadow him in certain situations.
Right.
You know, football's all situational, as you know, Al. So, you know, they might do that. But the Chiefs have really become very scheme-based with their passing game. You know, Mahomes obviously can make any throw anytime. I mean, he's so gifted. But, you know, their pass game this year has not been very good at the intermediate and deeper levels. You know, when doing research for the Super Bowl, I found a stat that I found remarkable. When you talk about passes that go 20 yards in the air from the line of scrimmage, 20 yards in the air from the line of scrimmage, Mahomes had the worst completion percentage in the NFL at 26%. By contrast, Sam Darnold completed 56% of those. So they have not really had a downfield passing game this year. They win on third down schematically. That's why I mentioned third down. And I think that's going to be so critical. And then, as you mentioned, the running element with Mahomes, he just runs more. And he just looks different in the playoffs when he runs. All of a sudden, he looks like a better athlete than he does during the regular season.
Yeah. No, you know, we lay people, we talk about the matchups of the running back and linebackers and the wide receivers and the cornerbacks. But you appreciate this game is decided by those big old boys in the OL and the DL. Huge guys there.
Can be.
Which line would you give the advantage? Which matchup would you give the advantage to?
I think the Eagles' O-line is the best run-blocking O-line in football and certainly one of the two or three best overall. They've really not had a bad game this season. So, again, now you look at the Super Bowl. The Chiefs obviously have a very good D-line. They've got a great player in Chris Jones. They've got a lot of players on their D-line that move around and line up in different positions. Spags knows all this. He's not just going to line up and play and let that Eagles O-line dictate the terms of engagement. But that O-line is so good, so good. So, you know, I just can't get past that point. Maybe I'll be wrong. I mean, Spags has been doing this a long time. He'll probably have some tactics that I can't fathom because I'm not Spags and he's a lot smarter than I am. But, you know, I just, that O-line, I mean, like I said, I was joking, but it's true. They weigh over 1,700 pounds. I mean, this is a big, big unit that's athletic.
You know, I have one question, but I just want to add to what you and James said about Andy Reid. I think if Andy Reid wins on Sunday, he will go up there with Lombardi and Belichick and that greatest,
I would agree.
Greatest of all time.
And I think it's deserving.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever been around Andy Reid at all?
No, I haven't.
He is, if you're around him, he's the nicest guy. He's humble. You know, he's just one of those guys. Like, you'd love being around him.
Yeah. Let me, one final, before I turn it back to James. You know, these two teams have been among the handful of really successful franchises yeah. over the last decade or so. And a lot of credit, you know, Mahomes and others on the Eagles. But the mark of success in the NFL, I think, Greg, is ownership. And owners who hire great talent and delegate, something that infamous Dan Snyder could never do, Jerry Jones can't do. But Clark Hunt, however much I might dislike his politics, is a great owner, and so is Jeffrey Lurie. Isn't that really yeah. critical for a franchise?
Well, again, you know, I happen to know Jeffrey Lurie because I'm local. I don't know Clark Hunt, never met him. But, you know, just as a logical statement, I think that sports are different than normal business. And I think that the owners that understand that there is a difference tend, and this is a very general statement, and people listening might say I'm wrong, and that's okay. But I think owners that understand that there's a difference and allow the people who are in the business of football to do the business of football tend to have more success. You know, it's because these are very successful people, as we know, who are owners. And you have to have a big ego to be an owner. You know, I mean, you've been successful in business. That's just the way of the world. But sports are not business, and, you know, normal business in that sense. And, you know, look, I know Jeffrey Lurie is involved, but he's certainly not involved in, let's say, you know, putting together the game plan or any of those kinds of things. And I'm sure, I know Clark Hunt's not, you know, so it's probably case by case, Al, but I think that as a generalization, that may be fair.
Well, the best model may be the Rooneys over so many yeah. years, but I'm going to turn it back to James.
So we've all watched a lot of football. You do it for a living. But I'm just going to make a statement, and does this make any sense? There has never been a pair of receivers in the history of the NFL that came from the same school and played on the same team, the likes of Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, ever.
That might well be true. I can't think back, you know.
Right, I know. I was sitting here trying to think myself.
No, you're right. I mean, you're talking about the two best receivers in the NFL.
Yeah.
And look, you know, you probably know this, James. I obviously right. you're an LSU guy. I remember right. watching the tape. You know, Justin Jefferson that last year at LSU only played in the slot, and there were many people in the league who had legitimate questions. You know, when you look back now how successful he's been, it seems right. silly, but many people had legitimate questions about Justin Jefferson as to whether he could play on the outside. Now, he did some of that at LSU the year right. before, but there were legitimate questions, and they were legitimate. And he's turned out to, I mean, he's right. ridiculously
right.
good.
Right. By the way, a two-star recruit.
Yeah, I know.
They only took him because his brother was a quarterback at LSU.
I remember that brother, too. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, remember that we beat Alabama in the regular season. We lost like 21-0 and that. But I was saying here, you know, people come up and they shock you. You knew LeBron James was going to be good from right. the day that he stepped out there. Okay,
right,
that,
sure.
That wasn't a big goddamn secret, right? But Justin, they couldn't find anybody to recruit him.
I know.
And remember, Burrow, the only two teams that wanted him were us and Cincinnati.
I know.
I mean, they, so much of sports is predictable, but a lot of it is not.
It's funny you say that because I remember after Burrow's next to last season, okay? Not the great season, you know.
The
year before. I remember that summer because I do a lot of draft work in the summer for the following year, you know. And I remember talking to people saying, you know, hey, he's probably a sixth or seventh round pick, you know, he's that kind of player, you know. And then obviously has that season. And I remember watching seven or eight games on tape and evaluating him. And I thought he was the only thing he didn't have, but it's not a big deal. He didn't have a power gun for an arm. But other than that, he had every single thing you could possibly want in an NFL quarterback.
So I'm going to give you a tip. Watch Garrett Nussmeier this year. He's where Burrow and Daniels were the season before they won.
I thought we were going to talk about the Super Bowl, but anyway. let me ask you this. You know this drill, Greg. It began with Steve Sable years ago. It's prediction.
Did I have to pick the winner?
It's prediction time. It's 10:30 Sunday night. What's the scoreboard going to say?
You know, this is a really hard one.
By the way, your record's much better than Steve's.
Well, I'm on record already, so I have to stick with who I pick because it's already out there. I picked the Eagles. And again, you probably could have gathered that from the way I spoke about their O-line. And again, I'm not picking it with tremendous conviction that I think, oh, my God, the Eagles are going to win this game. These games have a way of being different than you think they're going to be. And I think when teams look at both defenses, they might think it could be a relatively low-scoring game. I'm going to pick the Eagles, but I'm going to pick it 31-27, Al. And again, I'm picking out of my you-know-where because I'm not really great at prognostication because there's so many variables that could happen. But that's what I'm going to go with.
James, you agree with him?
By the way, Greg, Tony Kornhauser, in the last – 21-6 in the last 27 picks publicly against the spread.
Well, I don't even, you know, the thing is, I don't, I'm,
I know, I know, bet, I know, I know.
I've never been on a game in my life. By the way,
I guaranteed that Harris would win the presidential election. So you and I are not very good at it. Okay. All right. We're not prediction people, but so you think it's going to be you're expecting a kind of high score.
I remember thinking back to when the Giants and the Patriots played in that, was it the first time? And everybody thought it was going to be a high scoring game, and it was that 17-14 game.
I thought it was a bird nest catch, but a guy caught
the Burris catch. These games have an odd way of being. I mean, even the Super Bowl 2 years ago that the Chiefs beat the Eagles and it was 38-35. I don't think a lot of people thought you'd see that kind of game. These games have a way of being different than sort of the chalk, as they say.
Right. But all I'm saying is, who can tell 31-27 which way? But you're sort of expecting a game with some pretty good scoring.
James, I could be 100% wrong. I'm saying this with a lot of conviction.
Look, I understand that. We did this in a spirit of fun. It doesn't mean anything.
Right. Don't hold me to this, you know?
Oh, no. Next year, we'll hold you to it.
Of course we will.
James, the presidential election.
James,
you know?
Who have you picked?
I'm waiting on. I got a man. I got a guy. I'm waiting on him. But it'll be. I'll have it Friday morning. Everybody has a guy.
All right. I'll go along with you. I think you're absolutely right, Greg. Except I'm going to up it. It's going to be 34-31.
There you go. Well, you're a Philadelphian at heart, Al.
Hey, absolutely. Boy, I tell you, that Commodores-Eagles game last weekend was hard for me. It really was because now...
Oh, there you go. Because you've been in Washington a long time now.
Now that Dan Snyder has left, I'm back cheering for the team again.
Yeah. Well, Dan Quinn is a great, great guy, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to caution you. A lot of better say, Joe Kansas City loses, I'm going to ride this horse right to the end. Right.
Greg Cosell, you are the best. We love having you every year. Stay safe in New Orleans, and we'll post-mortemize your prediction next week.
Well, you know, if I'm wrong, you can put it in the trash can.
All right. Thank you, Greg. We'll be right back. All right, now for the outrage of the week. The November 5th election, if my math is correct, James, was 93 days ago, and all the congressional contests and all the statewide races are settled except for one, the North Carolina State Supreme Court race, which the Democrat won by 734 votes. But the Republicans won't accept defeat, even though a couple years ago they won a court seat by 413 votes and the Democrat graciously conceded. But now Republicans in North Carolina, who have a habit of doing this, are alleging that 60,000 voters, some of whom registered decades ago, may not have put their proper ID number on the ballot. Of course, they have to identify themselves when they cast the ballot. This is the same Republican Party that in December stripped the governor from appointing to the state election board anybody, a move that two former Republican governors say is unconstitutional. I mean, this race was won by Allison Riggs, and for the Republicans to keep denying that and keep trying to steal that election is outrageous. And if Trump, Musk, and company need any lessons in how to be authoritarian in a supposedly democratic system, they really ought to call Raleigh.
Wow. I mean, you know, now all the folks have to do is get it close and they'll just take it.
It's exactly.
We're now wearing horseshoes and hand grenades. Right. I get, for my outrage, these are hardly, like, dramatic things. Like, just two things that Democrats have done that are so unmoored to what anyone in the country thinks or feels like. It's almost impossible. The first one is some Democrats, some progressives in New York are advocating for bereavement pet leave. Okay, so in other words, if your cat dies, you get 3 days of paid leave. Does anyone even know, like in rural America, like where I grew up, how many dead animals in the entire history of the United States? Let me tell you something, a sentence that has never, ever, ever been uttered. Well, Martha, Fido died, so I can't bale the hay today. I mean, come on. I mean, please, just think of how, and fortunately, no one's going to overly publicize this, although the right's using it in some places. Just how clueless you sound to people who are agrarian. It's like, you know, you're living on a different thing. Life and death on a farm is something that happens every 6 hours. I mean, my God. Then we had the famous DNC chair race of, okay, I don't really care. Let me read to you something. Speaking to the Democratic National Committee, which met to select new leadership this weekend, outgoing chair Jamie Harrison attempted to explain the point about his rules concerning gender balance for his vice chair race. The rules specified if we have a gender non-binary candidate or office, that a non-binary individual is counted as neither male or female, and the remaining six office must be gender balanced, Harrison said. Did I just read this? Of course I did. And do you believe this? Of course you do, because that's the level of jackassery that, now, does any Democratic candidate? No, I don't even know if Kim Martin himself asked, but they do it. And it's like there's a plant somewhere in, quote, progressive, unquote, America that just to sees how many jackass stupid things that they can embrace. It's stunningly stupid. Both of them.
James, it reminds me of our dear friend, the late Alan Barron, about 35 years ago, when there was trouble in the Middle East and they kept talking about the Straits of Hormuz, said, when are we going to start talking about the gays of Hormuz? this is just as silly.
It is so, in on one sense, you shouldn't worry about it. Who gives a shit? It's just some deal. But in another sense, there has to be a AI-generated, progressive generator of really fucking dumb ideas. And I don't think human beings could even think of ideas as stupid. I think they're getting help from AI people or something. I just can't imagine somebody that a human being could come up with an idea that's dumb.
James, I totally agree with you, but let me make a point. The ideas that these lefties come up with are stupid. They really are. They're stupid. I mean, it goes back to defund the police, open borders, and all that. They are a small part of the Democratic Party right. versus the right-wing Republicans who are a large part there, and their correct. Ideas are dangerous.
Right. Correct. 15% of our party at the most believes in silly things, okay? Not even evil, all right? It's nothing evil about giving somebody a time off because a pet died. It's just not.
Right.
And theirs are, you know, they stormed the Capitol. It is a very fair observation, but the only hope we have is getting some power back. And the only way we're going to get power is to have appeal all across the United States. And the way to destroy that appeal is to let 15% of your political party take over its messaging. And they're gonna pay attention to it. The other side will. You know, no Democrat believes that shit, but they convince people that we're for that.
Yeah.
It's a problem. And I can tell you, the Western left, but European Western, I mean the real left, I'm talking about, they have not been right about a single thing in all of history. And they're never going to be right. They're just colossally stupid, impractical people.
Hey, James, now we have our listener questions. They're warming up, James. They're getting excited. They're coming in. We're going to start off with Gordon in Norwood, Michigan. I think he has been with us before. Will Susie Wiles be able to rein in Trump's worst impulses?
Look at the picture. It was in somewhere, maybe it was Atlantic, of her face when he was talking about turning Gaza into a tourist destination. She actually looked like she crapped a pineapple. There's no doubt she didn't know anything about that. And for all I know, she's very talented. You know, they call it Ice Queen. It's coming in. She ain't nowhere near, nor is would anybody be capable of dealing with this crowd.
That's for sure. There's always been people who were going to go control him or channel him. You know what? No one does that because he's uncontrollable. He's unchannable. He is who he is. He's crazy. And that's the way he's always going to be. That's part of his
appeal. And then you're here, Susie Wiles, you can have anybody you want. Maybe there's a little more. I'm sure she's trying to bring some kind of order and discipline, and I'm sure she will succeed.
Yeah. James, Jordan in Mesa, Arizona, says incumbent parties worldwide have lost power and have been punished by the voters for the current state of the world. In the United States, Jordan says, it's rare for an incumbent president to lose re-election. So could this be the start of an era of one-term presidents? Well, first of all, Jordan, actually, incumbent presidents over a little over 40 years, four have been one-term presidents and lost a re-election. So that's not quite as rare as you suggest. But your overall point is right. I think that there's a lot of, I guess, for lack of a better term, unrest, unsettling, the immigration, the economic situation. So I suspect you may have more one-term parties or one-term presidents, but you know, I did not think it would happen in 2024, and it did.
I guess if I take everything, well, in all of this insanity, particularly in the United States, we have 4% unemployment. Okay, we're growing. We have strong markets, we have strong currency, we have strong employment in this country, and we're producing this. What is going to happen when this thing goes to 7.5%? I mean, I don't know. I really don't, but we're an extremist, and at least from anything that you can discern by looking at numbers, we're not in a terrible time in American history. But we're sure acting like it.
Yeah. Yeah, no question. No question of that. Carlton in Granite Falls, North Carolina. I love North Carolina. I've been all over that state. I can't quite figure out where Granite Falls is, but I'm going to look it up afterwards.
I'm guessing more toward the west. But
it sounds like the west, doesn't it? Yeah. I don't know. Granite Falls probably is in the west. Carlton asks, outside of the Wisconsin Supreme Court race and the Virginia gubernatorial contest, are there any other races where listeners can direct their energy this year?
New Jersey?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we're going to win, but you don't want to take a chance there. I think Virginia's huge. And
it's not just the governor's race. There's all the statewide races.
Yeah, it's the lieutenant governor, attorney general is elected there. And, there are going to be some, just keep your eye for special congressional elections. We'll try to keep you informed as these come up. But that's a good question, and make us on our toes to see whether there's some off-year elections we can alert people to.
Yeah, yeah. Mary in Upland, California asks, use the tactic against LBJ. Can we get a chant of, hey, hey, Donnie J, how many lies did you tell today, or something similar? Mary, I think we ought to do blocking and tackling. I don't think protests matter much. I didn't think the protests against the Supreme Court mattered much. I think you got to get out there, and James mentioned races this year, if you care about that. Volunteer if you can, give money, knock on doorbells, and the politicians in Washington shouldn't worry about protests. They should worry about making the very, very persuasive case against some of the damage that Trump is doing.
Yeah, I would just tell you, if I was going to do it, I'd go, hey, hey, DJ, how many dollars did you steal today?
That's a better one.
You know? I think it didn't seem to be a giant protest, but there are signs, I'll say this, that the opposition is coming out of its slumber. And I, as you know, I'm a little bit of an advocate of letting this thing, we can't do everything, but people are starting to wake up, and that's the first thing that has to happen, is people have to wake up and get reengaged. They were just understandably depressed. It's kind of given up. I hear a lot, it's just a misogynistic, racist country. I so can't stand that, and I'll tell you why, because we're not going to stop nominating female candidates. We're not going to stop, should we, even consider it, which is wrong, thank God. No, we're going to stop from nominating and running people who are not Caucasians, which is a good idea. So if this is a hopelessly misogynistic or racist country, which I do not think, we're doomed anyway. So we better hope it's not.
Well, and I think there's lots of evidence that it really isn't with good candidates. Obviously, Barack Obama, but Wes Moore and Gretchen Whitmer and a number of others. So I it does take good candidates, and it may be a slightly extra burden, but, when you get good candidates, they meet that test.
Absolutely. See Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, and Arizona, where we lost the presidency.
I mean, James is there. I mean, I think almost every statewide official elected in Michigan is a woman, or at least most of them are. And the most prominent member of the state legislature is Mallory McMurrow, a woman. And it used to be the same thing in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Look, in Nevada was a majority of female legislature.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, thank you, I read. We have to proceed because we're not going to, nor should we. We're going to continue to nominate the females. We're going to continue to nominate the whole, racial spectrum in the world, whatever you want to call it. It's just not going to stop because that's not who we are.
Yeah. James Andrew in Jacksonville, Florida is asking, why aren't Senate Democrats organizing a full-on blockade of Trump's nominees? There's only so much they can do. First of all, Andrew, they can bring up cabinet members and everything. However, you can put a hold. The senator from Hawaii, who someday may agree to come on this show, is doing that for State Department employees. It's what Tommy Tuberville outrageously did for the military. Normally, I would say that's a bad idea. And the old Michelle Obama line, when they go low, we go high. You know what? Doesn't work anymore because they go so low. So I think the idea of blocking nominations, trying to demand concessions, playing the Republican game is unfortunately necessary. You do not want to unilaterally disarm with this crowd.
This extraordinary times require extraordinary measures.
Okay. Hey, our final question is picking up on something you mentioned earlier, James. Sarah in San Diego, California, what do you think of David Hogg as the DNC VP? Is this a good way to win back young men?
I don't think it hurts anything. He's a passionate guy, obviously. If it makes people feel good, who cares?
Yeah.
He seems very passionate. It seems like they're DNC members are bound and determined to, show how progressive and forward-looking and tolerant and some of the roof stuff is just looks asinine. I don't care. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I don't think the DNC chair matters a lot, so I certainly don't think the vice chair matters a lot. And I'm told that this guy, Ken Martin from Minnesota, is a good guy. I was disappointed. I thought Ben Wickler was the perfect candidate for that job in the sense that he's both an articulate spokesman and he's a good organizer. But that's not what the DNC members thought.
Apparently, it wasn't even close.
No, it wasn't. He won by,
about 100. To know what this group did, they're not really about winning elections. If you give them expenses, put them on three committees and they can travel somewhere, they can go and, spend three nights at the Marriott and vote, pretty much what And I think Martin has been a kind of internal DNC operator, seems like a nice enough guy, and here we are.
Yeah.
I don't think, if you ask us, a great art critic says, what do you think of Leroy Neiman? So, frankly, I never think of Leroy Neiman. Okay? She was one of the great prissy comebacks of all time. Again, I guess that's my attitude toward the DNC. I frankly don't think about it.
Okay. Keep those questions coming in now more than ever because you really make us think, and we love the provocative thoughts of some of our listeners. So please keep them coming in.
Absolutely.
And I will just close, James, by saying, go Eagles.
Go Eagles.
No, and Philadelphia's Eagles.
Eagles. It should be a good game.
It's going to be a great game. And the point, I just think Greg Cosell is the best. I really believe he's the best. He could be a general manager if he wanted to, but he's got a better job at NFL Films. And the point that was so interesting that you made, he said the key is the Eagles on first down and the Chiefs on third down. He said, what in the hell has happened to second down?
Yeah, I want to set a civil rights organization for second down. You never hear it, I'm serious. So you never hear someone say, well, it's a critical second down.
No.
It counts just as much,
And nowadays you hear it about the fourth down because they go for first, third.
They go
fourth.
For it a lot more. First, it's a three down game. You never knew there was a second. I wish somebody would do like second down statistics as a predictor who's going to win the game. I bet you'd be pretty good. The DNC should put second down in its rules. To say you can't mention first, third, or fourth down unless you mention
James,
second down.
Don't mention it because they'll do it. All right. Thank you for listening. Come back next week. Right. It was a great show. We'll have even a better one next week.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Fay Nutrition, MD Hearing Aids, and Magic Spoon, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them because when you do, it helps make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. Now, you also can find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. And remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. And we'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.